And good afternoon, and welcome to our interview section of the program here on Democratic Talk Radio. And for our interview section, our first one for this afternoon, I have a very special guest, Dr. Charles Kelly, who just wrote a book called Class War in America. Good afternoon, Dr. Kelly.
Hey, good morning, Al.
How are you doing today?
Just fine, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. And I tell you what, this is a very important topic because, a lot of times they don't like to talk about class warfare, but there seems to be a lot of that going on.
Yeah, there sure is. In my view, conservative politicians have created a government that deliberately favors corporations and wealthy investors.
And, well, it sure seems that way at the top, and it seems like when you do a little bit of research, it's that way all the way through it.
Yeah, but that's only half of the story. The other half is that in doing these favors for corporations and investors, they exact an incredible sacrifice on working-class Americans because it's the lack of wage increases of working Americans, and they're having to work under deteriorating working conditions that enables corporations to make so much profit.
So, and by keeping wages down, it's kept the standard of living down of these Americans low as well, while on the opposite end, the more affluent Americans just keep getting richer and richer.
Yeah, and to me, that's the epitome of class warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wrote the book, and that's why the title is Class War in America.
Now, Dr. Kelly, you're a retired management consultant and a former teacher, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And a little bit about your history, so our listeners are a little bit familiar with some of your qualifications.
Yeah, well, I've been a management consultant since 1962.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a tremendous deterioration in working conditions in corporations. And I've seen corporate executives at the top levels become incredibly greedy. You know, a lot of people today are discussing about, is Enron typical of the American corporation?
Mm-hmm.
In some ways it's not, but in many other ways it is.
Is it, Mr. Kelly, is it typical for more typical towards the larger corporations as opposed to the smaller businesses?
I think so, because the bigger and more complex you get, the more detached management gets from its own employees, and the more they become very self-interested in their own welfare, I think. It's much more easier for them to sell out their employees than in a small business.
Because of that detachment factor, you think, some of it is also part of, has to do with some of the management style or some of the executive ethics of some of these large corporations? It's win, 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 profit, profit, profit at all costs?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Milton Friedman is probably one of the gurus of today's modern corporate culture. And he said, he asked the question, does the corporation have any obligation other than to its shareholders? And his answer was, no, they don't. As long as they stay within the law. And that's where Enron is a little bit unusual in that I don't think you have that degree of sheer dishonesty among top corporate executives. But what you do have throughout the entire corporate culture today is the greed of the top executives and their interest in their own self-welfare as opposed to those of the employees. I mean, they will close down a plant in the United States, throw 2,000 people out of work, reestablish it in China at the drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the people who make all the sacrifices in that case are the workers.
So they have little interest in really helping out, you know, well, other than paying the workers, little interest in helping out the workers, or little interest in being nationalistic towards what might be good for the country.
That's exactly right. Their only obligation is to their shareholders. And the shareholders tell them, in effect, if you increase the price of my shares, I will vote for you to receive a huge income. And so it's a mutual scratch my back kind of thing. And of course the directors of Enron made something like $300,000 each, and they would vote high incomes for the corporate CEO and vice versa. And so it's not a conspiracy, but it's sort of, they're all a member of the same club. And they help each other out.
Dr. Kelly, how does this affect politicians? I mean, obviously it does have a effect. Is it always detrimental, or does it have positive aspects? It would seem to me that it would be more detrimental influence on politicians.
Yeah, it is, and to quite an extent, a lot of the debate that's going on today about the influence that it has doesn't make any sense. I mean, people are saying, well, did Enron buy influence, or did they simply support politicians who had goals similar to theirs? Well, what's the difference?
It sounds almost like the same definition.
There's no difference, really. In other words, what's the difference between me going to you and say, I'll give you this amount of money if you'll vote this way?
You know, I think some of that's the confusing part, Mr. Dr. Kelly, is they bandy these definitions about and change some of the wording on some of these things to make it seem like it means something else when it really doesn't.
Yeah, that's right. In other words, a politician can announce publicly that he's going to deregulate an industry. What he's saying, in effect, is if you want somebody who's going to deregulate your industry, vote for me and contribute money to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not a deal being made, but yet favors are given.
That's right. Well, I tell you what, this Enron thing, it just keeps getting wider and wider, and I hope that it opens up many Americans' eyes as to how much greed some of these large corporations and the kind of influence that they're having on our day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a couple of interesting pieces coming out about NAFTA, Dr. Kelly. Are you very familiar with NAFTA?
Yes.
And there's a certain provision in NAFTA called Chapter 11.
Yeah, I saw Moyer's documentary on that the other night.
I did too, and I thought it was just absolutely very interesting. I wasn't aware that was in there, were you?
Yes, I was. That's been in the news for a couple of years, particularly with regard to the California situation and the gasoline additives there. But what I found most instructive about that documentary is that the woman who was in charge of the committee that wrote Chapter 11, after she wrote it, then she formed her own consulting firm to tell people, corporations, how they could take advantage of it.
Hmm.
In other words, I'll write a regulation saying that if your environmental laws cost a company money who wanted to violate your environmental laws, you've got to pay them money.
Boy, by
she wrote that regulation, then she goes out as a consultant to tell companies how to do this.
How to get around it.
That's right.
Unbelievable. And this is NAFTA. Boy, I tell you what, and you know, they're thinking about another treaty, I guess, that works along those same lines. Am I mistaken on that?
Yeah, they want to give George Bush the ability to make trade negotiations on his own without the approval of Congress.
Hmm.
And basically, they're just going to break down all the barriers that companies have to going to other countries and setting up manufacturing operations there. And by the way, this is one of the ways that corporate America keeps wages from going up.
Okay, now that's why I mentioned that, because I wanted to see if there was a connection between these two, because it really is kind of like a conspiracy to keep wages so low to increase the profits of these large corporations.
Yeah, and what's amazing to me is the extent to which this conspiracy is actually quite well known. And the reason I wrote this book was because if you read the Wall Street Journal or Business Week or Forbes or Fortune or Barron's, you find out what the true intent of all these kinds of government policies really are. Because
those are fairly conservative publications,
those
Dr.
are
Kelly.
Our most prestigious financial conservative publications. And that what conservatives are doing is they're sending two separate messages out to the American public. And the messages are contradictory. On radio and television, if you hear a reporter from the Wall Street Journal talking about government policy, you'll say that globalization is good for working Americans because it creates jobs. And they'll say that tax breaks to the wealthy are good for working Americans because it creates jobs.
It's the same old trickle-down theory that's been running around for 30 years.
Right. And this is what they say on radio and television, and their targeted audience is the American voter. But in their print publications, when they're communicating to wealthy investors and governmental officials and corporate executives, the message is quite different. In their own news items, they will say that globalization has been a major reason for wage stagnation for the last 20 years.
So they're having it both ways.
They're having it both ways, and they're communicating to two separate audiences, and they've done a masterful job of keeping these messages separate.
Yes, they have, because I tell you what, wages on the low end of the economic income scale have stagnated over the last 25 years. You know that, Dr. Kelly.
That's right.
As opposed to income at the higher ends have just skyrocketed.
Yeah. Now, to some extent, you see, these conservatives are in a bind here because they don't want the Fed to raise the prime interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason the Federal Reserve will raise a prime interest rate is because unemployment goes down. And when they see unemployment going down, they say, oh, wages are going to go up. So we have to raise the prime interest rate. Now, to me, this is also class warfare. And it's not even a secret. I mean, you see this on the 6 o'clock news almost daily.
Right.
If the unemployment rate's going down, the Federal Reserve is going to have a meeting to see whether or not they should raise the prime to slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so when conservatives are writing in their print media to investors and politicians and corporate executives, they say, well, now, wait a minute, maybe the Fed shouldn't raise the prime because we've got better ways of keeping wages from going up. Those better ways include globalization, continuing to take away the power of unions to organize, and, you know, appointing conservative judges to courts who always find in favor of corporations instead of the union.
The average worker. Yeah.
And, deregulation has enabled employers to have a freer rein in the way they treat workers.
And Dr. Kelly, you know, you're absolutely right. They have had massive success along these lines and have had their way, it seems like, for the last 30 years.
That's exactly right.
And how do we right these wrongs? I mean, how do we change this? I know for me that I vote Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
That's my view of how I could change this, and by supporting unions and, mm-hmm. and supporting substantial increases in the minimum wage. Is wage relief one of the key factors here?
Oh, it sure is. And incidentally, the conservatives really are deliberately telling a lie when they say that to stimulate the economy, you need to give tax breaks to the rich.
Dr. Kelly, we have to take a brief pause.
Okay.
If you can hold that thought, I'll be right back. Okay, thank you. Dr. Kelly?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go again.
Okay.
3, 2, 1. All right, and joining us after the break is Dr. Charles Kelly, a former management consultant for various industries, just wrote a great book called Class Warfare in America. Good afternoon, Dr. Kelly, and once again, thanks for joining us.
Again, it's good to be here.
If you wanted to finish your thoughts, sir?
Yes. When the Republicans presented their tax stimulus bill, they said that giving tax breaks to wealthy individuals would increase jobs because it would stimulate investment in new industries.
Now, we've heard this argument before.
Yeah, and it simply isn't true, because when the economy goes bad, if you read all these financial publications that I just mentioned, like the Wall Street Journal, when the economy goes bad, the investment advice to wealthy people is get out of the stock market. Withdraw your investments, become more conservative, get into bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you give tax breaks to wealthy people, you have no idea what they're going to do with that money.
With that money.
On the other hand, when you give tax breaks to middle and low-income Americans, you know darn well they're going to spend it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons conservative economists, when they talk about inflation, they frequently refer to it as wage inflation. And the reason they say wage inflation is because when wages of working Americans go up, the economy grows.
It always happens.
And it's a cause-effect relationship, and it's very direct. Yet when it comes time to giving tax breaks, they want to ignore the lower-income Americans and give all the tax breaks to the wealthiest 1%. In the last stimulus package that was just voted down by the Senate, fortunately, the top 1% would have gotten 41% of the tax cuts.
Another unbelievable tax cut for the rich.
Yeah, and then the lowest 60% of Americans would get just 7% of the tax cuts.
Dr. Kelly, how do they keep hoodwinking the American public with these kinds of things? Well, I mean, it's just amazing to me that the American people don't see it.
Well, it's the way they talk about it. And as I say, the reason I wrote this book is because I wanted to show the disconnect between what they say on radio and television and what they say in their print media.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when it comes to tax cuts, I've got a direct quotation. I know you don't like to have an author read from the book.
Well, that's okay. Go ahead.
But bear in mind that these are the exact words of J.C. Watts, who's one of the House Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And he says,
mm-hmm.
I trust my constituents can do the right thing with their own money. If they want to buy their kids school clothes, if they want to buy a much-needed household appliance, new cars, tires for the car, whatever.
Okay, now he's making it sound like these tax cuts are going to the people that need it the most, and that's just not true.
That's exactly right. And in this book, I wrote a whole column of statements taken out of Republican congressmen's statements about who their tax benefits were supposed to benefit. And so these are some examples of what they say. They want to benefit those whose incomes have stagnated for the past 20 years. People who wonder, if I'm working so hard, why is it so tough to make ends meet? Where does the money go? Workers on Main Street.
See, now that has become so generalized and so vague.
And a working couple making $54,000 a year. And this is how they get the public
to buy
so upset with their taxes.
Hmm.
Because and why they think that the Republican tax bills are beneficial to them. Because they're hearing the tax cuts described this way on radio and television. On the other hand, if the American public would read the Wall Street Journal, they would see articles like this. Now, this was the headline in the Wall Street Journal. Tax bill could mean a windfall for the well-off. That was the headline. And then in the body of the text, it says, don't do anything yet, but start salivating. The tax bill passed yesterday by the House of Representatives could turn out to be the biggest tax-saving bonanza in years for upper-income Americans. Now, that doesn't sound like somebody who's struggling to buy tires for his car.
No, it sure doesn't. It sounds like they're just pandering to the rich and saying that to the folks that are on the more menial income level, that we'll give you everything you need as well.
Yeah, and then let me just look at read another column from the Wall Street Journal. Oh, no, this was Business Week. The Business Week article had the headline, Estate Tax Relief, Guess Who Gets the Breaks? And then in the text it says, a sure way to win sympathy from Congress is to cast two icons of the American economy, small businesses and family farms, as victims of a rapacious federal government. The trouble is, the big winners from this rewrite of the federal estate tax law would be wealthy investors, not small business owners or family farmers.
Boy.
Now that was the Wall Street Journal. That wasn't Ralph Nader speaking.
Mm.
And it's not even me speaking. That is a conservative financial publication stating that.
Well, Dr. Kelly, it seems more and more like it's turning out to be the rich Republicans against everybody else.
Well, one thing that has not been generally stated, and I wonder why. I don't know why more Democrats don't have the guts to say it out loud. But Republicans really believe in aristocracy.
Mm-hmm.
They believe that wealth and political power should be inherited.
Mm-hmm. And they have the right to it.
And they've got the right to
it. I agree with you 100%, Dr. Kelly.
You know, like I've had on other talk radio programs, I've had a caller call in and say, well, if I've got $1 million, why don't I have the right when I die to leave that to my son? And my answer is, I think you have the right to leave the entire $100 million to your son. But your son, in other words, it's not a death tax. It's a tax that your son has,
mm-hmm.
who has a $1 million windfall dumped in his lap for not doing anything. And in my view, if you're not doing any work at all and you have $1 million dumped in your lap, you at least should pay as much income tax on that income as somebody who works in a mine for 40 hours.
Well, of course you should.
To make $35,000 a year.
I don't understand the mindset of a person that doesn't think that we shouldn't pay taxes, Dr. Kelly. I mean, I look at it as a responsibility for citizenship.
Yeah.
And the more you have, if you are rich, I would think that the more responsible you should be. I guess I don't separate it right there, but see, I guess for the greed thing comes in, I guess, for so many other people, and they want all of their money.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, to me, some things like my American pride and my American national feelings are more important than wealth, even for me.
Mm-hmm.
And but I guess I'm a little bit different than most Republicans, because it seems like the Republican Party has embraced greed, Dr. Kelly. And now, I don't mean the mainstream American Republicans, because like we've talked about, they're being duped and hoodwinked.
I think you're right.
But it's the...
Well, they're also being conned by the kinds of things that we've talked about up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
They're being conned by the people that they listen to on radio and television.
Rush Limbaugh. Right.
Yeah, that these tax breaks are fair, and it's going to benefit the economy.
It should be good for the average American, and they're not.
And all I'm saying is that, well, I've been a subscriber to the Wall Street Journal for probably 20 years, and the same thing with Business Week and Forbes magazine. And I know what they've been saying over the years, and I know that, as I say, the messages that conservatives are giving to investors is quite different than the messages to the voting public. And you were asking me, what can we do to turn the situation around? And I think this sort of thing needs to be publicized.
And talked about and debated.
And talked about and debated, which is why I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote the book because I felt that too many people didn't appreciate
what's happening.
The way conservatives are deliberately lying about the conditions in our society and our economy. And they need to be called on it. And their own words need to be thrown in their faces.
Because the gap is just getting bigger, isn't it, Dr. Kelly?
Yeah, it is. It goes every year.
It really is. And and it would take a blind person almost not to notice. And I don't mean that disparagingly against people outside, of course.
Yeah. And, you know, in 1929, the top 1% of Americans owned 44% of the wealth.
Well, we're awfully close to that now, aren't we?
We're close to it. Last I saw was 41.5%, and that was 1978. So we've had 4 years since then.
Mm-hmm. I think
we're probably getting close to that 44% now, I would guess.
I think you're right.
And, of course, the low point was 1976 when they only had 19% of the total wealth of the country.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that was kind of a heady times for some of us more progressives, wasn't it?
It was.
It was. Dr. Kelly, very interesting. I have learned a great deal this morning in our conversation. I sincerely appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And if you would tell our listeners one more time a little bit about your book and how they can get it.
Well, it's Class War in America, and, of course, you can get it online.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to order it directly from the publisher, you can get it at cost and not have to pay any shipping charges. And their number is 1-800-662-8351. That's an 800 number, 662-8351.
All right. We've been talking to Dr. Chuck Kelly. Dr. Kelly, thank you very much once again. We're looking forward to reading your book, sir.
Yes.